So welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much. Exciting to be on 2SER.
10 years ago, you chronicled troubled youths that would drop into the Oasis Centre at Surry Hills. Now, a lot of time has passed. Can you tell us what was it that drew you back to exploring the lives of the many homeless people you met 10 years ago?
Well, my colleague Ian Darling, he was sort of the mastermind of the whole film, the previous film, wanting to ignite the issue of youth homelessness, you know, in the social and political agenda. He got together again because we were very disappointed after the first film roused such a groundswell of support for the issue. And then, you know, subsequently, just after Kevin Rudd left and had pledged to halve homelessness by 2020 and everything, it just all fell off the radar. You know, there's been so many issues since. There's been the Syrian war and things are just bumped out of people's consciousness. So this was kind of an effort to reignite people's interest in the story, you know, through the personal stories and also just to show, you know, the three-dimensionality of people's lives. And we had this treasure trove of archive of these people, and we just wanted to follow up and see how they'd fared in the wider world.
Also, 10 years on, we actually witnessed also the changes that happened to the lives of Paul and Robin Moulds. Now they're servicing another vulnerable group in the community. Can you tell us, how has life changed for this couple who, you know, featured so prominently in the original doco?
Well, they're still as tireless as ever, as you mentioned, like looking after, you know, people experiencing hardship and disadvantage. And yes, they're working with asylum seekers and refugees now out in Western Sydney. But, you know, not a day goes by where, you know, ex-Oasis people are constantly calling, needing their house, but still many crises going on. So they never turn anyone away, and they just have a giant, endless heart that, you know, keeps giving. So, yeah, their lives have changed in terms of the demographic of people that they're working with. But the editor coined the term, they've gone from the local homeless to the global homeless.
Also, what I found interesting, just look, 10 years on, is sort of revisiting those original subjects as they grapple with their life challenges, whether that be previously it was addiction or lack of accommodation, lack of social support. But we do get to witness the sort of resilience of these individuals. I mean,
it was very astounding to me how people had come out of the seriously dark places and really just emerged into the light out the other side. You know, life is a work in progress, so everybody's got further to go. But I was very encouraged that I honestly didn't believe that people would emerge out of, you know, deep addictions and, you know, serious problems. And I think it really illustrates the sort of innate capacity that human beings have to recover and restore themselves and heal from serious trauma.
Now, there are some optimistic stories as well as some sad stories, but what I found interesting is what one of the original boys from the documentary talking about the difficulty sort of finding that sort of second chapter in your life. Now, this is someone that's given up drugs and has to obviously stay away from those sort of social groupings that got him into trouble. I just thought that was interesting. You know, he's trying to find that new passion to connect to sort of avoid boredom. In your opinion, how effective have governments been in sort of dealing with sort of social isolation of individuals who have like made big steps in their lives, but probably still need some guidance to like really realize their potential?
Yeah, I think we need to pour a lot more resources in. I mean, people need to have accessible education, training. Like, I know who you're referring to, Darren. I mean, he's, after 20 years of full-on drug use, he is now clean and functioning and, you know, very stable. He's housed and he's got so much to offer, but it is really difficult to re-enter society after such a long time on the fringe. And it is very isolating once your whole pool of circulation was people using drugs. Or how do you break out into a new world? It is really difficult. So I think, you know, there should be just accessible places for people. Like, I think we spoke to Brian Burdick and he talked about how, you know, with the demise of the church and the demise of unions and stuff, people don't have natural community places to belong. They need to have more encouraging sort of community hubs where people can just blow in and do stuff. I think, yeah, it's a very, society feels very fragmented, and if they were to invest in more community grassroots sort of places where you could be, or centres, to just somewhere to go and do something and belong. And I think that's what Paul and Robin sort of have a little hub out in Auburn where they have people come in and work and get food, and, you know, just everyone needs to belong somewhere. Humans are so incredibly social. So, yeah, I think the government should fund, instead of punitive measures for people sort of trying to find their way, there needs to be services and centres people can go and training they can access that's free. And, you know, people have talents that can be tapped into, but without the resources, it's, yeah, it's hard to sort of restart your life, I guess, as you suggested.
And there's also quite a few uplifting stories. I mean, individuals that have, as I mentioned, experienced pretty horrific bringing. Now, an example of this is Owen, who's an aspiring rapper and is working for the Salvation Army. Did you want to tell me a little bit about
Owen is on fire. Ozone Australia is, yeah, he's rapping in all sorts of concerts and he's promoting. I mean, he's multi-talented, so he's doing his own promotions. He's actually secured funding to record an album to launch with the film called The Streets to Stage album, and he's actually recruited a whole lot of people with lived experience of homelessness that want to be in the music industry, and he's secured funding to record all the tracks. He is unstoppable. He said I'll sleep when I'm dead, and he's literally writing music all night, recording music, and he has a great manager who is really nurturing him. And I just can't believe that kid who was like the serial pest, criminal, crazy on drugs, that can be this incredible guy that he is today. It really is phenomenal.
After working at Oasis for many years, Paul and his wife, they made a decision to assist refugees on offshore detention, which unfortunately, due to government apathy, led to much trepidation, and the Salvation Army eventually feeling that they just cannot provide adequate assistance. What I found interesting in this documentary was, but also another overlooked aspect, is that many caregivers themselves can sort of overlook their own personal well-being. I was just wondering, what do you think of? Because a lot of people that give a lot of their time probably don't realise how overwhelmed they just are by the sort of amount of the need of assistance.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a very poignant issue in that sort of sector of welfare and stuff, that people just burn out. They give so much of themselves. And for me, to hear Paul say that he reached that desperate point after being offshore, to think a man like that could break, and Robin as well, they're just pillars of strength. And if they go down, everybody goes down. So, yeah, that was very eye-opening to think about that, just the absorbed stress and the trauma that they get vicariously from all of the stuff they do. And Robin is actually a chaplain for the ambulance, and she really has experienced some of the most intense things that I couldn't even repeat the stories. Your jaw hits the floor when you think the things that they've witnessed and experienced. So, yeah, it should definitely be in the limelight, you know, how much people give. And just so altruistically, I mean, it's really not a job for a lot of the people that work trying to make our society safer, better, fairer. You know, they're unsung heroes. There's so many people out there doing hard yards to try and make other people's lives better. And collectively, it will help us all. So, yeah, we owe them a lot.
And as I mentioned, this film also documents the lives of another vulnerable group, asylum seekers, who, you know, require their own sort of different form of support network to connect with a new community. Would there be any ideas of like a documentary sort of exploring that? I mean, I think that's also a very interesting theme. They'd have a lot of wealth of material for a documentary.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, you know, Paul's church out there is just the colourful, wonderful, like, African dancing, and there's so many different, so many nations unite under that small community centre out there in Auburn. I definitely think, I'd love to just sit there for a year. And some of the stories are, don't even know how to react. It's just so far from experience of like living in a stable country and not being exposed to war. So, yeah, wonderful stories and just very warm people, and it's hard to reconcile with all the media reporting on, you know, boat people. It is in stark contrast when you're out mixing and hanging out there in Paul and Robin's center. So I would love to embark on a journey like that filmically. I have to raise a bit of money. Any takers, welcome to contact.